Angus at Work, a podcast for the profit-minded cattleman. Brought to you by the Angus Beef Bulletin, we have news and information on health, nutrition, marketing, genetics, and management. So, let's get to work, shall we? Hello and welcome to Angus at Work. I'm Casey Brown. Today we're tackling an often asked question, because unfortunately there's not a simple answer. Which is better, killed vaccines or modified life? Can they work together? What kind of timing do you need to keep in mind? And how do they affect your profitability? Sean had sat down with Thatch Winslow from Elanco to discuss these questions, and there were some surprising answers. So let's dig in.
Hi, I'm Shauna Hermel, editor with the Angus Beef Bulletin. We're here today talking with Thatch Winslow with Elanco about lifetime immunity. Thatch, can you tell me a little bit about, and I should say Dr. Winslow.
Thatch is fine.
Can you tell me a little bit about your background? Where did you kind of come into the veterinary side of things?
Oh, that's an interesting story. So I'm a Yankee. I grew up in the Northeast in a lobstering town. At a very young age, I fell in love with the West and was working summers during high school and college in Wyoming. Maybe just a tad of black sheep of the family, you know, kind of went my own direction. So then I ended up at VPI in animal science and graduated from there and got my went to vet school there too and opened a practice in 1991, a large animal ambulatory, and did that for 17 years. Okay. And then my associate wanted to buy the practice, and my body was starting to get a little bit, I was getting slower.
We do get older, don't we?
Yeah. And so I went to the dark side. I went to work for the Virginia Department of Agriculture for government.
Oh my.
And I was regional veterinary supervisor there for 5 years, which was about 3 years more than I thought I was going to be. And then a position came open as the assistant state vet in Wyoming. Working for the livestock board.
Northeast to Northwest.
So I headed out, Northeast, Southeast, West. But yeah, so I took that position, did that for 6 years. And then I was made aware of a position with Elanco back in the cow-calf stocker deal, back in my part of the country where I was working, and it made sense. So here I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's prompting your look at a lifetime immunity profile?
Okay, well, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
I want to say that the foundation of animal health, you know, on a cow-calf operation, and really any operation, it centers around management. That includes nutrition, that includes genetics, that includes animal husbandry, and that's the key for animal health. We build on that with different products, and so we can enhance productivity, different products, and that may be anywhere from dewormers to vaccines. And as we're talking about vaccines today, some of the most predominant pathogens we talk about are BVD and IBR. And they're unique in that they are both respiratory, i.e. we see those in the feedlot, but they're also reproductive, i.e. we see them in the cow-calf operation as well. And so the term lifetime immunity could be a little deceiving. We don't have a product that provides lifetime immunity.
There's no easy button?
There's no easy button, no. But what we do have is a concept of how to build lifetime immunity in your herd and maintain it. And so we know that modified live vaccines do a very good job of stimulating both branches of the immune system. So that's both the cell-mediated as well as the humoral or the antibody side of the immune system. And once you give modified live vaccines, that immune system is now set up for the rest of its life, of that animal's life, to respond well. And so if those calves that we vaccinate, you know, from branding all the way through weaning, have gotten modified live vaccines, then they're going to go into that feedlot feeding situation more as what we would call moderate or low-risk animals. And there's other factors, obviously, transportation and things like that. And therefore, there's going to be less sickness, right?
You bet.
And less sickness means better performance and less use of antibiotics and all the things that we want in regards to that animal performing. But then we also have in that herd those calves that are coming back around into as our replacements, right?
Right.
So we were developing our heifers and maybe raising bulls. And what we have understood for a long, long time is that heifers with a modified live vaccine, we can have decreased fertility. But even the cow herd, through some of the work that Perry has done.
That's Dr. George Perry?
Yes. We have seen a decrease in conception rates when modified live vaccines are used too close to breeding. And so while that used to be the gold standard for immunity was modified live, the research has been done to show that if they have a modified live foundation, we can booster them with a killed vaccine, and that killed vaccine will provide the immunity we want through that next breeding season while avoiding that unintended consequence of decreased conception rates. And we're talking about $29 a head.
Okay.
In money recovery there.
Is that based on product cost, or is that based on the number of calves that you would...
So that's both. The majority of that $29 is based on open cows, having less open cows. Because when we use a killed over modified live, that first heat conception is 6.5% higher.
6.5%?
Yes.
Okay.
And the overall conception rate is about 2.5% higher. And so not only are we getting more cows bred, but we're getting them bred earlier. So the remaining part of that money, so roughly $4 a head, that comes from increased weaning weights because we have older calves, right? We're weaning an older calf. It had longer time to grow. So at $29 a head, using a killed vaccine over a modified live, that's your benefit. How can you do that? Can we do that with a strictly killed program? No, we need that modified live foundation. And so that's where we get into this lifetime immunity. And so at Elanco, we say, we want to use the right products in the right animals at the right time so that we can build and maintain a lifetime of health and productivity.
Excellent. So what are some of the things as you go through a vaccination program? And we know that delivering the vaccine in an ideal setting accomplishes what we want it to, but there are things that we can do that minimize the vaccine. If we leave them on the dash, the vaccine on the dash of the pickup, we can't expect it to work as well. What are some other things that producers need to think about and maybe with a killed product versus a MLV product as well?
So I love that question because I used to say that the only thing worse than not vaccinating an animal is to vaccinate them thinking that it's going to work, but it doesn't,
yes,
right?
Yes, yep.
You know, that false confidence that we have. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're purchasing your vaccines from a reliable source. You know that they have been properly manufactured from a company with a good reputation. You know that they've been handled well, stayed under refrigeration. And then when it comes to at the farm level, you know, if it's a vaccine you have to mix, don't mix them all up at the beginning. Mix them as you use them. Keep them refrigerated, what a lot of people don't, but don't let them freeze.
Okay.
So don't put that bottle on ice, you know, on an ice pack where it might freeze. What a lot of people don't realize is that sunlight can damage vaccines. So keeping them in a cooler keeps them out of the sun, keeps them refrigerated. Don't mix vaccines. There are some things in one vaccine that make destroy things in another vaccine. So make sure that the syringes you use, that you clean them properly. Typically just with very hot water is the best way to clean them, and then an approved lubricant for the barrel. And then make sure that you're administering them properly.
Okay. Now as you go through and you start those KOs in your vaccination protocol, when are you starting? What age are you starting with that MLV vaccine?
Now we're getting into protocols, and I could write one that I thought would be good for the whole country, and 99% of the time I'd be wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Because depending on region,
yep,
and depending on the operation, and even within an operation, we may have a different protocol for a registered herd than we do for a commercial herd. So even on the same farm, in the same county, on the same land, we may have two different protocols. And so that's where it is so critical that you involve a veterinarian, a herd health consultant, have a team to work with you to develop your protocols, and a nutritionist. Mm-hmm. And then you can figure out when the best time it is. Typically, Some calves get vaccinated at birth. The more common is at branding, or what we call spring turnout in some parts of the country. And then calves are handled midsummer, which oftentimes they're not accessible, but when they are, it's a great opportunity to give a booster vaccine, maybe to throw in an implant, maybe a midsummer deworming. So that may be a good time to do that. And then as we get into pre-weaning and weaning, those are very critical times for vaccination. As we jump around into the breeding herd, then the most common times to vaccinate are going to be pre-breeding and then at preg check. And maybe a third time, if it's not combined with a preg check for a scours vaccine, pre-calving.
Now, as we look at things on vaccinating the calves with an MLV vaccine, what risk does that pose to the cow? Are we going to cause any reproductive issues there?
That's an excellent question. And there are no modified live vaccines that I'm aware of that are approved to give to calves that are nursing cows that have not received that modified live vaccine. And so keep it in mind, this is where it's really important to work with your consulting veterinarian. As when I was in practice, I very confidently used some vaccines off-label that were very effective. We can't recommend that, but a veterinarian certainly can, and they can tailor that protocol for that operation where they feel that you can get that modified live in a very safe manner, depending on the product use and when it's given, and make that work. But again, that's something that as a veterinarian to veterinarian, I can speak to that. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to that as a general recommendation in this situation.
We're going into a time frame where we're expecting that there's going to be a buildup in the cow herd, so people buying heifers to expand their own cow herds. What do you recommend as far as bringing those new recruits, whether they be an adult cow or a heifer, and fitting them into your own system that you have?
Yeah, so biosecurity is a big part of the industry. And that could be as simple as whether you're buying single source calves, you know, in the feedlot, or if you're buying, you know, commingled cattle. On the cow-calf operation, if you have a closed herd and you are now going to reach out and start to buy replacement heifers, I recommend that you know very well what their vaccination protocol is, and maybe even dictate what it should be. Make sure they've gotten at least one modified live, and then at this, and buying from a source that has a good reputation. Same time, if you are selling heifers, you want to have that reputation. And part of that is the protocols that you have and what you do. And over time, calves start to become more and more valuable than the market because of reputation. The other thing that I would say is important, when you're buying outside cattle, I'll date myself, but there was a time where we wanted a brucellosis test and a TB test. Maybe we wanted a Yoni certified herd. All of those things can be of value, but to me right now, the number one thing on the list would be a negative PI test for BVD.
For BVD.
Yep. If an animal is born PI negative, it will stay PI negative, and that test is good for its life. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something like another disease where they could not have it yesterday and have it tomorrow. So a negative PI test, I think, would be valuable. But I would, again, consult your veterinarian, understand what risk your herd is, and then be careful about what you're willing to pay a little bit extra for as far as the certifications of the cattle you're buying.
Would you go so far as to talk to the veterinarian of the herd that you hope to buy cattle from?
Oh, I think so. You know, I don't want to get into the trust thing. I mean, as cattlemen, you know, we're soft to the earth, right?
You bet.
And so you tend to trust when the producer says, I've done this. But if you don't feel comfortable, by all means, verify it.
Now, you mentioned that giving the MLV vaccines ahead of breeding, if you give it within 60 days,
yes,
correct, could cause some fertility issues. How about the bulls? We often tell people to make sure that they don't forget their bulls and to provide the same vaccination program for their bulls that they do their cow herd. Are there fertility issues there as well?
We haven't seen any, no, and none that I'm aware of. But I will say is, in general, when I work very in general, rule mm-hmm. of thumb.
Yes.
There's always exceptions. But I, when we talk about a vaccination protocol for bulls, I say, whatever you do to your cows, do to your bulls. Now, there would be a couple exceptions. If you were using a trick vaccine on your cows, you may not do it on your whole cow herd. And the other would be, you know, when you're doing a scours vaccine in your cows, certainly the bulls don't need a scours vaccine because they're not making colostrum, right?
Right,
but,
right.
But in general, the vaccination protocol for the bulls should mirror what you do with the cows and at the same time.
No, we talk about starting with the MO vaccine first and then being able to go with the kill vaccine after that and in the next years. Does that wane? Is there a, you know, most people keep their cows 4 to 6 years, but then we might want to keep them 10.
And absolutely, longevity is a big part. And as a matter of fact, when we look at those, I'm going to back up in a minute. When we look at those conception rates being bounced up to second and third and fourth cycle, so that's longevity, right? What defines yes. longevity in a herd? It could be the crippled cow. It could be the bad udder. It could be didn't have a calf. But the number one reasons we cull our cows is because they don't produce a calf, right?
Yes.
And so that long, when we start talking about lifetime immunity and the advantages of getting that killed vaccine in and getting those cows bred early, less open cows, most open cows end up getting sold. So that affects longevity. To answer your question, and I apologize for sidestepping to answer your question, once we prime that immune system with a modified live, that memory is there for the life of the animal. So we can come in with that killed vaccine again and again and again and get the same strong immune response. And we don't have to come back 5 years later and throw another live in.
Excellent.
We can continue on with that. And I need to be careful. Have we done the herd work to show that in a controlled study? No. But all the evidence that we have points that direction.
Is there anything that we haven't covered?
A couple things, maybe. One is that I didn't talk about manhemia vaccines. Manhemia vaccines are important. There's a long history behind manhemia, which is the old Pastorella hemolytica. At one time, we actually had a live, and it probably just caused disease. And then we worked through where we had some Bactrins, and there's a ton of endotoxins, and that knocked those cattle pretty hard. We have evolved where the best vaccines out there now aren't even using manhemia to make the leukotoxin. We know leukotoxin is key, but they're not even using manhemia. So through recombinant DNA, we're able to use E. coli to make the leukotoxin that's necessary for that vaccine, making that a cleaner, smoother vaccine.
So is manhemia related to E. coli, or how does that...
Nope, that's just part of genetic engineering. That's the magic that the bacteriology guys do. They splice a gene into the E. coli,
okay,
and now it starts making leukotoxin.
Okay.
There is going to be people who use manhemia vaccine in their cow herd and not, you know, but typically when you're preparing those calves for weaning, that's where your risk is, and whether you're selling them or keeping them, and so having a good manhemia vaccine in there is important too.
Okay, as calves are approaching weaning time, what products should producers be thinking if they're planning on selling those calves as feeder calves?
Okay, so I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit here because I really believe in the right products and the right animals at the right time. So as we pick antigens, calves should be well vaccinated with a blackleg vaccine, okay, or that's your, I say blackleg, a seven or eight way clostridial, that's better, technically correct, with an IBR vaccine, with a BVD type 1 and type 2 vaccine, and with the manhemia vaccine. That's my baseline general recommendations. Because I only want to put the antigens in that I think we're going to benefit from. Because I don't want the immune system to be paying attention to antigens that aren't important. So I would challenge the industry that we see little to no PI3. And why are we vaccinating? And one might say because we've been doing it forever. And that's what we found 50 years ago. IBR, PI3, BVD, BRSV, Histophilus, and manhemia, and Pastorella, and so we make those vaccines. But we're starting to learn, you know, what's really important and what isn't. I would argue that there are cases where BRSV vaccine is not necessary. And so the list that I gave you doesn't include some of those. That being said, if I'm selling on a value-added program, and that program says in order to sell on our sale, they have to have IBR, PI3, BVD, BRSV, PI, you put those products in because you're going to get a premium on those calves for doing that. But I challenge, I'm not going to say what's right or wrong, but I challenge the industry to look at what products they're given and are they truly benefiting from those, because the old adage, oh, it can't hurt, is not true.
So now with your position in the industry, you have a way to monitor some of the diseases that are becoming more or less prevalent in the feedlots. Is manhemia one of the diseases that is becoming more prevalent?
You know, manhemia is probably just holding its own. Some may say it's dropping off a little bit, and that would be maybe not in numbers, but as a percentage basis, because what we are seeing is more histophilus than we've seen before. And so that's probably one of the biggest changes that I've seen in that regard.
Okay. And I assume with these you're talking about an initial vaccination and a booster before they leave the farm?
You're talking about with all the other diseases, yes. Technically, a modified live, you can get by with one. It's not a matter of boostering that, but sometimes we don't get, in a population, we don't get 100% response. So typically that second round of modified live isn't a booster as much as it is picking up the ones that we missed the first time.
Okay.
Now, with some of the manhemia vaccines and the one that I talked about that is the cleaner of the vaccines that's been made with recombinant, that's a one-dose product.
Can you over-vaccinate calves?
You bet. You bet.
And what are the ramifications to that?
Every time we put a product in an animal, again, there's a cost, okay? When we ask the immune system, and I tell people if they've ever traveled internationally, I've been doing mission trips to Haiti, and I've got a laundry list of vaccines. They don't give them all the same day, and when I get one, I know it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so is there a cost to a vaccine? Absolutely. So again, it's the right products in the right animals at the right time, nothing more, nothing less. Do we always know what that exactly is? No. And so you hedge on the safe side, right? If you're not sure, yeah, you probably give that other dose. But when we know, we're not going to, you know, the more we throw at them is not the better.
And that cost shows up in both product dollars out of your product, but then also maybe some performance.
Dollars out of your pocket and definitely performance.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for taking time with us.
No, thank you very much.
Listeners, to get more information to help make Angus work for you, check out the Angus Beef Bulletin and the Angus Beef Bulletin Extra publications. You'll find links to subscribe to both of those in our show notes. If you have questions or comments, please let us know at avbeditorial@angus.org. And we'd sure appreciate it if you would rate this podcast or leave a review to tell us what you learned and what was helpful. And share this episode with any other profit-minded cattlemen. Thanks for listening. This has been Angus at Work.